A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, in a black and white film, a shield appears, emblazoned with the initials WB. Warner Brothers Pictures presents Betty Davis in Dark Victory. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin, read by Chloe Lehman. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles with George Brent, Humphrey Bogart, Geraldine Fitzgerald, Ronald Reagan, Henry Travers, and Cora Witherspoon. Executive producer Hal B. Wallace. Directed by Edmund Goulding. Screenplay by Casey Robinson. Music by Max Steiner. Copyright 1939 by Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated. Now, a thin, rugged man saunters into a stable and picks up a telephone.
Hello there, is this the house? I've been trying to get you.
Michael, do you realize it's 5:30 in the morning?
Who is it, Agatha?
That Michael.
Two housemaids.
We had a party here last night, and the last guest hasn't driven out of the driveway yet.
The other maid answers a second phone.
Hello, kitchen. Lucy speaking.
Yes, I know.
Yes, Miss Anne.
What's that racket? The telephone's been ringing all over the house. I'll talk to him.
A pretty brunette. Anne sits up in bed.
Michael, what do you mean at this unholy hour of the morning?
Oh. Well, good morning, Miss Anne. It's a cheerful morning now, isn't it? I was wondering if I might talk to Miss Judith.
No, you certainly might not. She hasn't had 2 hours' sleep yet. I wouldn't disturb her for the world.
Oh. Hanging up, Anne rises and opens her door. At the opposite end of the hallway, another bedroom door stands open. Inside, a beautiful young woman with dark blonde hair lies in bed. She furrows her brow, opens her eyes, and groggily reaches for a phone on her nightstand.
This is Miss Judith Traherne of the Sleepy Trahernes.
Oh, is it now? Well, this is Mr. Michael O'Leary of the Wide Awake O'Learys. They have a cash customer for that Colt. We can get 10,000 if you snatch it quick.
If you mean Challenger, not 10 and not 20. My head's just woozy, not vacant.
If you don't mind my saying so, Miss Judith, it might be better for you to take charge of the cups and the ribbons and leave the handling of the horses to me.
I do mind your saying so. I gave you your orders last night, Michael.
Anne enters.
I ought to slap that man's face.
He is impertinent sometimes. What can we do? He's just about the best trainer money can buy.
I suppose he is. What time is it?
About 5:30.
Good morning, Martha. Hello, Daddy. Come.
A maid brings in a foxhound.
We're going to the stable, Martha.
Are we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, couldn't you both go back to bed and get a little sleep?
Will you get us some coffee, please, Martha?
Yes, miss.
Martha leaves. Sitting up in bed, Judith kisses the dog.
Well, here we go.
Later, she speeds down a country road in a convertible. Beside her, Anne covers her face.
Man, are you asleep? It's a nice world if we can just stay in it.
What do you mean?
You better let me drive.
No!
Give me!
I will not!
As they drive past a field, Michael O'Leary hops onto the car's runner.
Good morning, lady.
Oh, I managed to get you up, did I?
Michael, don't be fresh.
Oh, I hear you've got the finest string of horses in the country. The least you could do is to come down and let them have a look at you. Surely if the little horses can get up early in the morning to run and jump for you, you can get up to watch them.
Michael, really?
She shoots Anne a look, then pulls up to a stable where a small crowd mills about. Michael steps off the runner. Judith gets out.
Anne, come in.
Thanks for the lift.
A stable boy climbs behind the wheel.
Take it away, Bob.
I simply wouldn't stand for it.
I won't.
He's got to be fired.
He's going to be.
And right now.
Thinks he can lead us around like a lot of horses. You're right, Anne. Fire him.
Me? Oh, no, I'm not the mistress here. I'm only the secretary.
Oh, but darling, you have the character. You're always telling me so yourself.
A dapper, well-dressed man drunkenly wobbles up to them.
Good morning, Alan.
Oh, 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 what a party.
Glad to see you're still on it.
All ready for tonight. All I got to do is change the orchid, see? Good morning, Anne. Nice, sensible Anne.
Good morning, Parasite. Why don't you go to bed before they put you there for good?
Well, now, confidentially, it's a scheme. Your man, Michael, told me to give me a nice, fat commission if I could get our sweet Carrie to buy your Colt Challenger.
Michael?
He wouldn't dare.
And I can use the cash, too.
Now, this is the end.
Judy, darling.
Hello, Carrie.
I wouldn't take that colt off your hands if you let me have a bargain.
I won't sell you the horse, but I'll sell you his trainer.
That's who she really wants to buy, but he won't even look at her.
I never heard of such a thing.
Judy, you want to sell that colt?
No, I do not. Colonel, dear.
Oh, I think you ought to buy that horse, Colonel. He's a perfect darling. You can even invite him over for tea. You play around on your front lawn with your children and your dogs. Oh, he's a love. He whinnies. Unfortunately, a steeplechaser has to have more than just a pretty smile.
Colonel Mantle, my father held that foal up in his arms and said, Judy, here's a champion. By victory out of field...
Out of field nurse by man of war. Let's call him Challenger. You catch that horse at the 2-mile pole with his heart bursting in a water jump ahead of him and he'll fold up on you.
Michael, you might fold up and I might fold up. But that horse has the breeding.
That was for me, I take it, Miss Judith.
I told you I wanted to run him this morning. Where is he?
He's in his stall having his morning cup of tea.
Well, go bring him up here. When I tell you to do something, do it.
Yes, Mom.
He leaves. Judith leans against the trunk of a large oak. Wincing, she presses her hand to her forehead. Anne comes over.
That head again. It comes and goes.
Judith stares after Michael.
I'll show him if that horse has courage.
What are you going to do?
Judith runs off. Moments later, she tightens straps around the knees of her pants. Michael watches.
Michael, how long have I had you?
1 month and 3 days.
Remind me to think about firing you.
I don't think you'll be firing me, Miss Judith. We're going to get on together. Well, now, just because I called you little darling a coward, I...
Someday you'll learn that courage is in the blood.
She hops onto Challenger, her tall black colt.
Now, take your little horse and run along.
She throws him a cool look and turns the horse away. Challenger steps unsteadily for a moment, then breaks into a canter. Judith guides him onto a steeplechase course. Her house guests gather nearby, including Alec, Colonel Mantle, and the plump, middle-aged Carrie. Judith starts her run. Challenger easily clears the first obstacle, a low shrub. Anne and Michael join the others. On the course, Judith and Challenger leap over a hedge, then a fence. The white-haired colonel nods his approval.
Good riding, Judy!
At a 4-foot-tall fence, Challenger lurches to a stop. Michael eyes Anne. Judith runs her horse back a good distance, then urges him forward again. Carrie regards the colonel.
What's the matter with him? I haven't seen that before.
Challenger clears the hurdle. This time, Anne grins at Michael. As Challenger nears another fence, Judith grits her teeth. Suddenly, several fences swim before us. Challenger smashes through the fencing. Horse and rider tumble to the ground. Later, Judith sits in her room sipping milk. Anne enters.
Well, how are you feeling now?
Oh, fine.
How's the shoulder?
All right.
How you escaped being hurt, I'll never know.
Anne, you know something?
What?
That colt didn't throw me, I threw him.
Anne's eyes widen.
What are you talking about?
You know what happened? I saw two jumps. I tried to take him over the wrong jump.
You saw two jumps?
Yes, that's what it was. What was the ghastliest feeling? Everything went fuzzy.
Judith, why didn't you tell Dr. Parsons these things?
Oh, poor old befuddled Parsons. You know what he always says. My dear, you've been staying up too late. You've been smoking too many cigarettes.
So you are, you know, and the house is always filled with gangs of people.
If he only knew what happened last week at the colony.
She relaxes into her chair.
What happened at the colony?
An old lady was coming through the swing doors. I knocked her umbrella out of her hand.
Why?
Someone said I was drunk. Another time, coming out of Elaine's on Park Avenue, I ran right into a woman with a dog on a leash. I ran right into the leash.
Oh, Judith, you should...
Oh, I didn't hurt the dog, but the woman was furious. Confidentially, darling, this is more than a hangover.
If you don't tell Parsons these things, I will.
No, you won't, Anne. You're my best and my truest friend, and you won't tell a soul. I wouldn't have told you except. Well, I won't have a dumb animal blamed for my mistake.
As she rises, a maid comes in.
Yes, Elizabeth, what is it?
Dr. Parsons is here.
Look, Judith, I had to promise him we'd go to a specialist about that giddiness.
Oh, but I haven't any time for doctors. Martha, bring my things, will you?
Listen, darling, you may be really ill.
Oh, but I haven't time to be ill. It's just some minor nonsense.
Very well, then. And if you're going up to town, I'm going with you. I'm not going to have another tumble and ruin all your pretty clothes.
Be silly, Anne. I'm perfectly all right alone.
Oh, you're as stubborn as a mule.
The doctor enters.
Are we ready?
She says she's not going with us.
Thank you, Martha. Oh, darling, I've got so much to do. You have the big specialist examine her.
She starts down the staircase.
Goodbye, children.
Anne and Dr. Parsons look at each other in alarm. They rush down the steps. Judith lies face down at the bottom. As Anne and the doctor reach her, a maid joins them. Kneeling, the three start to turn her over.
Careful.
In an office. A nurse grips a telephone.
No, I'm sorry, Dr. Parsons. I'm afraid it would be useless. Dr. Steele has closed his office, you know. Permanently.
A man enters.
No, he's not coming back. You're welcome. Goodbye.
Sounds good, eh, Wainwright?
I'm going to cry in a minute.
Don't forget, I've got to be out of here in 45 minutes.
What shall I do with this case of Dr. Parsons? He's dreadfully worried. He asked me to hold you here by force if necessary.
Well, you tell Dr. Parsons I've waited 9 years to catch this train. I'm not going to miss it just because some Long Island nitwit fell off a horse. Listen to this. Miss Judith Treherne, daughter of the late sportsman and wire manufacturer. Imagine putting that stuff in a case history, huh?
Say, don't forget to have Dr. Carter waiting for you.
The dashing Dr. Steele heads into his study.
Say, I'm awfully sorry, Doctor. I believe when I left, you were calling me an idiot.
You know, the boys at the club were talking about you last night.
Were they?
They won't believe it.
What?
A man in your position giving up a practice like this.
Gerald, what do you know about brain surgery?
Well, I think if I had the surgical courage, I'd be in it. To go inside of a human being's skull and tinker with the machinery that makes the whole works go. That is romance, isn't it?
Romance, huh? There's your romance.
He shows him a piece of paper.
Florist bill?
Yes. Flowers for my last patient. He was a gifted young composer. In fact, the night before the operation, he started a new composition. He didn't finish it. Maybe you read about it in the papers.
Yes.
Yes. The operation was a brilliant success. The patient just happened to die.
That's a pretty old joke, Fred.
Is it? Now look at any brain surgeon's mortality rate. You'll find out just about how unfunny it is.
Are you quitting because you've lost your nerve?
What?
What else can a man think?
I'm not quitting. I'm going back to medicine.
Medicine? What do you mean, medicine?
I have a little laboratory on a farm up there in Vermont. Medical Research Bureau is backing me. And Fish in Philadelphia is going to do the pathology. Incidentally, the best man in the country. So that's that.
How many men would give their eye teeth for a practice that you're throwing away? What is this research, actually?
Cells.
Cells?
Brain cells. Why do healthy, normal cells go berserk and grow wild? Do you know?
No.
Nobody knows. But we call them cysts and gliomas and tumors and cancers. And we operate and hope to cure with a knife, and half the time we don't even know the cause. Our patients have faith in us because we're doctors and... Well, you can tell the boys they can split up my practice and welcome.
You and Pasteur.
Well, maybe you're right. Someday, somebody will discover a serum that will be to these growths what insulin is to diabetes and antitoxin is to diphtheria. And maybe earn his title of Doctor of Medicine.
What Dr. Parsons is here.
He is?
He insists.
Well, I suppose I should be polite, huh?
I suppose I must be going.
Yes, I know.
Dr. Carter heads for the door.
So long, Fred, old boy. You'll be back.
Don't hold your breath.
Good luck, old man.
Thanks.
The kindly Dr. Parsons enters.
Fred, can't you put this thing off, whatever it is?
Sorry, Doctor, I've closed my office.
Have you read the case history?
Oh, you mean this gossip sheet? Something about a wire manufacturer's daughter?
Please, never mind about that. This girl's desperately ill. I've been watching her like a hawk, and she's been losing ground each day.
Well, if 2 minutes will do you any good, I'll talk. What's this about headaches?
She's been having them persistently. Even before the accident, I suspect.
Before?
She calls them hangovers.
3 weeks. And you wait until now?
You don't know that girl. She's a very stubborn patient. Only yesterday, she went to a revival of Cyrano in the afternoon and played bridge half the night. She won't cooperate. She won't even tell me anything.
Won't talk to her.
Fred, we're old friends and I'm desperate. I brought this little girl into the world. Took care of her father until he died.
Well, if she's such a great horsewoman, why was she thrown?
Ah, that's it. It was a queer sort of accident. She crashed into the right wing of a jump, almost as if she'd held her horse deliberately at it. I was there. I saw it.
You sure it was the right side?
Yes. Why?
Yeah. Well, in that case, I'd say your best bet is to get in touch with Finlay.
Finlay's in Europe.
All right. Then get Park.
I don't want Park or any of the rest of them, hang it all. They're no better than I am. I want you.
Now, look here. If I start making exceptions, I'll be stuck here another 9 years.
Fred, you're always talking about the obligation of doctors to humanity. Well, Fred, there is humanity.
They step out.
Sorry, Doctor, it can't be done. Told you I've closed my office.
Come on, Anne, this is ridiculous. I'm late already.
Judy, please. This is Dr. Steele.
She shakes his hand.
How do you do?
How do you do?
My name's Treherne.
Judith Traherne, or don't names matter? Mm. I mean to that cold scientific eye of yours. We're just little guinea pigs, aren't we? So glad to have met you, Doctor. Come on, Anne.
Where did you get those burns?
What burns?
In your right hand. Here. In the first two fingers.
Oh, I never noticed them before.
I see. Would you come in here a minute, please?
She squints uncertainly.
Come along, Judy. And you wait.
Let me have this, will you, Doctor? I'm going to see Miss Traherne. When it's time to go, you'll be sure and warn me.
Certainly, Doctor.
He takes her case history.
Oh, just a moment, Doctor.
Steele follows Judith into his study and closes the door.
I haven't much time.
Matter of fact, I haven't much time myself.
He moves his hat and coat off of a chair.
Dr. Parsons tells me you're a great hunter.
Well, you could hardly expect me to enter your office leading a pack of hounds.
Please.
He gestures to the chair. She takes a seat. Stepping to a window, the doctor raises a blind. Sunlight falls onto Judith's face. She squints. As he studies her, she looks away.
I understand you don't like to talk about your health.
That's right.
Any particular reason why?
It's just a boring subject, that's all.
Oh, most people love it. I make my living by listening to them.
Then I'm afraid you're wasting your time.
I'll send you a bill.
I'm 23 years old. An only child. I weigh 110 pounds stripped. I've had measles, mumps, and whooping cough, all at the proper ages. I believe I have no congenital weaknesses. Shall I go on?
Yes, please.
My father drank himself to death. My mother lives in Paris. I take a great deal of exercise. I'm accustomed to a reasonable quantity of tobacco and alcohol. I'm said to have a sense of humor. Is that enough?
All the inconsequential facts.
She strikes a match. As she brings the flame to her cigarette, her hand wavers. He guides her toward the tip.
Thank you. What are the consequential ones?
Does that light bother you?
Not at all.
Do you use your eyes a great deal?
I generally keep them open, Doctor.
He looks somberly away.
What do you do with yourself down there in Long Island?
Oh, horses, dogs, shooting, yachting. Travel, parties, gossip. All the pleasures of the station wagon crowd. You don't think much of that, do you?
No, not much.
Why not?
Just doesn't appeal to me, that's all.
Do you condemn everything that doesn't appeal to you?
Oh, by no means. You asked for my opinion, I gave it.
Well, anyway, that's my racket. What's yours?
Mine? Oh. Brain surgery, large practice, about 10 days off every summer.
Sounds awful.
It is.
Then why do you do it?
Because, like yourself, I've been caught in a racket.
Oh, Doctor, what a relief to know that you're no better than I am.
She strikes a match to light his cigarette and again misses the tip. He guides her toward it. She looks into his eyes. He blows out the match.
Thanks.
Judith turns away.
Ah, but you see, I'm clearing out of my racket. I'm leaving for Vermont in about 15 minutes.
Vermont? You don't mean that narrow, pinched-up little state on the wrong side of Boston?
That's the one.
No kidding?
No kidding.
What are you going to do there between yawns?
Ah, you wouldn't be interested.
Oh, come now, Doctor, after leading me on like this.
Well, I'm going to do scientific research on the growth of cells.
In little guinea pigs?
No, just cells.
Sounds silly.
So I'm told.
Still, I almost envy you. Must be nice to believe in what you're doing.
Don't you?
Not in the way you do. Oh, I'm not complaining. Take it all in all, they've dealt me a very good hand. I'm young, I have no particular responsibilities. I don't intend to cultivate any either. One's freer without. She'll probably marry someday, no hurry about that. When I do, I shall build a house on a ridge I know with a glorious view. I have my horses. Any luck, I'll have about 40 years of that. I think that's a pretty good setup.
Rising, she takes an anxious puff on her cigarette. Steele, tall and broad-shouldered with a thin mustache, lowers the blind, blocking off the sunlight. As he watches her intently, she looks away. He steps over.
That light was bothering you.
Why do you keep hopping on that? There's nothing wrong with my eyes.
You were squinting.
I was not squinting.
Sorry, but you were.
Well, suit yourself at your office.
She turns her back to him. The doctor moves a chair out of her path. Judith strides to the door, stops and turns to face him. She's dressed in a long coat, trimmed with mink.
What'd you do yesterday?
I played bridge in the afternoon. I went to the theater in the evening.
Other way around, wasn't it?
Yes, I guess it was.
What was the play? Cyrano, wasn't it?
Yes, why?
Did you like it?
Well, I had such an awful headache.
How long have you had these headaches?
Oh, I don't have them.
You have one now.
No, I have not.
Seated in a chair, she glances away.
How'd you make out a bridge yesterday?
Let me think.
Quickly.
I don't remember.
I know. You're lost.
Yes, I lost.
How much?
How can I remember? I play bridge every day.
Losing a lot lately?
Yes.
Playing badly?
Well, I...
Forgetting what cards are out and what's bid?
Why do you ask me such stupid questions?
Wait.
As she rises, he takes her hand.
Did Dr. Parsons say you could go out yesterday?
I'm accustomed to looking after myself.
But you did disobey his orders, didn't you?
What if I did?
Well, why do you pay a doctor for advice and then disregard his advice?
I didn't call him. Someone else called him.
Oh, so you're taking orders from somebody else, are you?
I've never taken orders from anyone. As long as I live, I'll never take orders from anyone. And I'll tell you something else. I'm well. Absolutely well. I'm young and strong and nothing can touch me. And neither you nor Dr. Parsons can make an invalid out of me. And now I'm going.
Wait!
He gives Judith her gloves.
I'm sorry to have wasted so much of your time.
That's right. Run away because you're frightened.
That's not true.
Yes, it is true.
She stands at the door for a moment, then lowers her gaze. Looking up, she throws her gloves into a nearby chair. Dr. Steele takes her elbow and leads her back into the room.
That's why you held certain things back from Dr. Parsons. You were afraid to admit them.
He guides her to a chair, and she sits.
And that's why I didn't tell him you've been having these headaches for months. But you have. And lately they've been getting worse until now you're never free of them. And your eyes, they've been cutting up too. Just like somebody shutting a pair of folding doors. Till your vision is almost cut in half. You pretended it was your imagination. But it isn't. And then that queer, dull feeling in your right arm. You can't laugh that off. And I'll tell you how you got those burns on your fingers. A cigarette. You didn't feel the burns because your sensory nerves are paralyzed. Your memory's all shot to pieces. You can't concentrate. Look at your bridge scores. And you're irritable because your nerves are all on edge. You won't admit it, but you can't deny it. Can you?
He bends close to her. Gazing at the floor, she shakes her head.
Now I think we'll get somewhere. Come on. Come on.
As she gets to her feet, she takes his hand. They step to the center of the room and stand face to face.
Now just hold my hand with your right. Now squeeze. Tight. Come on. Good and tight. That's it. Good. Now the left. That's right. Now would you mind removing your coat?
Well, I'm afraid this coat is all there is.
Oh. Well, just sit up here then, would you?
She sits on his desk.
That's it. Maybe we can move this sleeve above the elbow.
Yes.
Oh, just a second.
He opens a sliding door to the waiting room.
Miss Wainwright, nothing in here to bother you.
He shows Judith the set of instruments. The nurse enters.
It's nearly time, Doctor.
I know. Now, give me your right elbow, please, and just relax.
He taps the crook of Judith's arm. It jerks.
Ah, the left.
Steele tests her other arm with his rubber hammer.
Good. Now, will you cross your knees, please?
This always makes me laugh.
Yes, it is silly, isn't it?
He taps her knee.
Good. Now the left, please.
She recrosses her legs. He taps the other knee.
Now, don't be frightened of this. It's just an electric light.
You're very kind to your guinea pigs, aren't you?
Just look straight ahead, please.
He shines a beam into her eyes.
Mm. I've been told they're a nice color. Do you agree?
Just once again, please.
He leans in close.
That they're a nice color.
Nice, yes, fine. Now I'm going to ask you to close them. Hold your hands out, palms upwards, please.
He starts with her left.
Now tell me what this is.
A game die.
It's a cube.
Hard or soft?
Hard.
He puts it in her right.
Now, can you tell me what this is?
I'm not quite sure.
I see. Now, just a minute. Can you tell me what that is? Move it around in your hand. Know what shape it is?
A pencil.
I can't quite make out.
He puts it in her left.
Can you tell me what this is?
A pencil, silly.
That's right.
May I open my eyes now?
No.
He puts a swatch in her left hand.
Is that cloth rough or smooth?
It's a piece of silk.
I see. Well, I'm going to fool you this time. What's this?
A coarse swatch in her right.
You can't fool me. It's still a piece of silk.
He trades a concerned glance with Nurse Wainwright.
All right, You can open your eyes now.
Am I promoted, teacher?
Now I'm going to ask you two more questions. How long is it since you first noticed these headaches?
Oh, horrible months ago. About 5 or 6.
Have your eyes been bothering you for that long?
Oh, that's only lately, in the last few weeks.
Oh, well, that's a big help. Now, I want you to tell me...
Dr. Steele, if you don't leave immediately, you'll miss that train.
Judith's large, round eyes study his face.
Cancel the tickets.
Doctor...
Never mind, there are other trains on other days.
Yes, doctor. Thank you.
Not at all. A few days one way or the other doesn't matter.
I'm sorry I've been so difficult.
You were a good sport.
If I weren't that doctor, I'm afraid I wouldn't be much of anything. Tell me, what's wrong with me? Is it my eyes?
Well, I'd be a pretty poor excuse for a doctor if I told you before I was positive myself. Anyway, for the next few days, I want you to have some x-rays taken, lots of them. Otherwise, you'll lead your normal life, see your friends, give parties, do everything you have been doing, with one exception.
What's that?
You've got to see a good deal of me.
I bet you'll be a frost at a party.
Days later, she sits with Steele and two other doctors.
Anything else, gentlemen?
No, I think that's all.
Can we go somewhere and talk for a moment?
Yes.
Come right in here in the sitting room.
She leads them to an open door.
You'll find cigarettes on the table.
Thank you.
Better put your shoes on.
The three doctors go inside. Judith, barefoot and wearing a dressing gown, rushes to the staircase.
Hey! You guys, be quiet! There are doctors in the house.
Hey, what have you got?
I don't know, maybe it's kittens.
The doctors approach.
Well, what's the verdict?
Dr. Steele will talk to you.
She nods.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Harris.
Goodbye. I'll show the doctors out, Judy. Right, then come up, will you?
All right.
Goodbye.
The two doctors follow Anne down the steps. Judith stares after them for a moment, then goes back into her room. Smiling at Dr. Steele, she shuts the door.
Would you like a drink?
No, thanks.
Well, the prisoner will rise. The sentence.
We've got to operate.
Operate. On me.
Steele nods.
Where?
He points to his head.
No.
Well, after all, the brain's like any other part of the body. Things get out of kilter, have to be adjusted.
Oh, no, I won't. Anne. Anne!
What's the matter?
Come here. Quickly. Tell her. He wants to operate.
Operate?
Yes, on my head.
Oh, no, you've made a mistake.
I knew almost at once. I just wanted confirmation, that's all.
What's she got?
Yes, what have I got?
Technically, it's called glioma.
Glioma?
Oh, don't listen to him.
It sounds like a kind of a plant.
Yes, it is rather like a plant. Parasitic one. If it's taken care of, what...
All surgeons are alike, Judy. Don't be upset, darling. We can call in other doctors. We wait, hmm?
Yes, yes, of course.
But you have to face it sooner or later.
Suppose we just don't talk about it anymore.
Judith marches out, closing the door in Anne's face. Hurrying to a vanity table, she sits and gazes intently at her reflection. She sweeps her hand over her head and through her hair. Martha, one of the maids, enters.
What?
Another headache, Miss Judith?
No, not another headache. Yes, a big headache. And I want a bottle of champagne for it.
She turns back to the mirror, her eyes wide with fear. Now, a sign reads Fairview Hospital. Inside, Steele walks along a hallway. Reaching a door, he turns the knob and peeks into a room.
I said no, and I mean no. Excuse me, please.
He gestures to a nurse. She joins him in the hall.
She's very nervous, doctor. I can't seem to do anything with her. She wants to see you.
Did you take the medication?
She shakes her head.
Well, let's get her to sleep.
Inside, Judith wears a plain white gown.
No, darling, it's still not too late to go home.
May I come in? This is your doctor speaking.
Yes.
Hello.
Well, how is everything?
Everything's awful.
Is it?
Look what you make me wear.
Oh, my, they are pretty dowdy, aren't they? I suppose you brought some nice things of your own to wear?
Yes, I did. Some lovely nighties. In fact, I bought 2 new ones, especially for this.
Well, Miss Dodd, I don't see any particular reason why Miss Treherne shouldn't wear her own things if she wants to.
Martha!
Martha, bring that over here.
Martha hands her a nightgown.
See?
Oh, it's lovely.
You better turn your back.
No, I think like this.
He drapes it over the hospital gown.
See, that's much better. There.
Very pretty. Oh, thanks. Here's a present for you.
What's that?
Something to make you sleep. Come on.
He holds out pills and a glass of water. She takes the medicine, swallowing hard.
Thank you.
He gives the glass to the nurse.
But I don't want to sleep. Anyway, how could I in a 2x4 like this? At home, I have a bed that's big enough for 6. Why, I can't even move.
Now, just a moment, just a moment. Let me show you something about this bed. Now, watch this.
He raises the center of the bed.
See that? Rest your legs. Down the back.
He raises the head.
There, that's for your back. Make you feel much more comfortable. Well, before you're through here, you'll want to take it home with you.
That is much better. You know, I can't understand about me. I've never given in a fraction to anyone before. Here I am letting you bounce me up and bounce me down.
He regards her with a smile. She leans forward.
Exactly where? Where does it happen? Here or...
No, no, no. That's my worry.
Her hand falls from her brow.
How do you do it? What do you do?
Chatterbox, aren't you?
It is a distasteful subject, is it? Well, I don't care. I don't care about anything. This is a nice bed. It's a nice room, too. And you're miles away over there. Come here.
Anne rises from a chair and steps closer.
I love you, Anne. I don't know what I'd do without you.
I love you.
Do you two like each other?
Of course.
Well, I want you to. Because I love everybody. Will they cut off my hair?
Just a little.
I don't want my hair cut off.
It'll grow back.
She lies on her pillow. Of
course it will, silly of me. You know something?
What?
I feel so good. Nothing to think about.
You're going to sleep now.
That's right. I must do everything you say. I put myself in your hands.
She takes his hands into hers.
There are the nice hands. Good, strong hands. Doctor.
Yes.
You do something for me?
Yes.
When you get inside my head, see if you can find any sense in it.
Her eyes shut as she lies with a contented smile. Steele tenderly tucks her in. Now in a hospital reception area.
Dr. Steele? Yes, Dr. Steele is all through in surgery 7. It's all clear.
A doctor walks past.
How are you, doctor?
He greets another man, then enters the surgeon's locker room. Steele and Parsons approach.
Dr. Driscoll. Was that the laboratory's last word?
I'm afraid so.
There's no hope.
No. Those are the pathological findings. She's bound to get a recurrence.
And that means?
Oh, about 10 months.
Invalidism, I suppose.
No, I think it's a rare case. She'd apparently be as well as any of us. That is until... Well, her sight may fail her near the end.
Amblyopia?
Yes. It'd only be a few hours after that.
And I brought her into the world. Hang it all, Steele. Don't stand there saying nothing.
It's a rotten business doctrine.
Frowning, he strides to a locker and puts on a suit vest and jacket. Another doctor comes over.
What's the matter, Steele?
Glioma.
Malignant?
Steele nods.
Girl like that. So alive. So entitled to live. And this thing, this growth comes along and puts a period to it. Makes you almost wish it happened on the table.
He shoots the doctor a look, then pats Parsons on the shoulder.
Are you going to tell her?
Do you want her to know?
No.
And there's your answer.
They step into the hall and walk to Judith's room. As they reach her door, Parsons tugs on Steele's arm. The younger man turns to him, holding his index finger to his mouth. They enter. Judith lies asleep in bed, wearing a surgical cap. Anne and a nurse stand nearby. Steele touches the side of Judith's face for a moment, then exchanges a quick look with her friend. Stepping away, he signs a sheet of paper on a clipboard and gives it to the nurse.
Watch your temperature. I'll be back later.
Anne follows him out. Parsons eyes his patient.
I brought that little girl into the world.
Doctor?
In the corridor.
She'll be all right.
How long?
Oh, a few weeks convalescence.
Would she really be all right, just as she was before?
I think I can promise a complete surgical recovery.
You think so? What does that mean? Will she be well?
Yes.
With brow creased, he turns away. She stares after him. Later, Steele writes on a hospital form, patient's condition, complete surgical recovery, to be discharged today. He signs it Frederick Steele, M.D. Next, he opens an envelope and takes out a note. Embossed with the initials J.T., it reads, "Oh, doctor, I may be discharged, but you're not rid of me yet. I expect you tomorrow for cocktails and general rejoicing. Your grateful patient in room 426. Now, Judith stands before a set of mirrors in a fancy gown. She wears a close-fitting beanie on the back of her head with her hair curled around it. Martha kneels beside her, checking the dress.
Martha, look, it fits beautifully, doesn't it?
Yes, miss.
Couldn't tell a thing, could you? Thank you, that's very good.
Martha gets to her feet. Judith checks her reflection once more, then steps into her sitting room where Alec waits.
Behold, a new woman from top to toe. Don't get up, Alec. New shoes, new stockings, new dress, new head.
A new disposition.
What was the matter with my old one? Like it?
Oh, it's very nice.
Good.
Anne enters.
Oh, Alec, hey. What's wrong with my old disposition?
Never mind, darling. I've always loved you despite your faults. I gotta get another drink.
I have to go down, too. Come on. Keith, what's the matter?
It's Michael. He's taken to whistling for us now.
Whistling for us?
They go to a window.
Oh, Anne is challenging. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Miss Judith.
How nice of you to bring him. Oh, you have got him in good shape, haven't you?
Yes, your little horse is in fine shape. Turn him around so she can see him. But he'll still never be a steeplechaser. We're teaching him to crochet. He's working on a set of dialies.
You'll take that back when he wins the national.
Everyone around here is glad to see you back.
Are they? How nice.
Yes, indeed they are. The boys at the stables, even the horses. Take your hat off when I'm talking to a lady.
A stable boy.
I'm very glad. Thanks for bringing him.
Anything for you, Miss Judith. Anytime. All right, take him on.
In the window above, Judith sniffs the air.
Doesn't the world smell nice? I wonder where our New England friend is.
Isn't Madam coming through the gate now?
Well, come on, then. Anne, do I look all right? Do you think I want to change my dress again?
There used to be 6 dresses on the floor. Now it's 12. Used to be mad. What that doctor's done for you, you're mad as hell.
They head for the staircase.
Now, don't let's make too much of a fuss over it and spoil it. I'm going to be very busy with my friends, and I'm not going to seem too anxious. And don't you be too anxious, either.
Downstairs, they enter a party.
Hi.
Judy. Hello, Judy. Hey.
Harry. Oh. Hello. Oh, Judy, you've never looked better.
Thank you.
Oh, the hair.
Oh, how clever.
Do you like it? When did you do
that? Oh, no doubt.
Good to see you.
Oh, it's
good, honey. Really good. This house has been a morgue.
Thank you.
Oh, darling, Frank will sell you those horses.
Oh, how wonderful.
I'll talk to you about that. I'm a business one.
You would.
Let's have some champagne. Where can he be?
He'll be here.
Well, I'm going to have some. He told me I could. Will you?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Agatha. Here's to me, to life.
And may you never be ill again.
Thanks.
She turns to Anne.
There he is. Have those things come yet?
I don't know.
Well, go see.
You will.
Judith crosses the room.
Colonel Mantle, Dr. Steele. How do you do?
Speaking generally, I consider doctors a pack of frauds. Try to tell me port is bad for my gout.
How do you do, Dr. Steele?
Oh, hello, Judith. How are you?
Hello, come on. That's my gang. They're here every day. Sit down, will you?
Thanks.
You're late.
Yes, I was at the hospital.
Were you?
Mm-hmm.
Have a drink?
No, thanks.
I had one. You said I could. Thank you again for everything, for my horse, my first day, my drink.
Been a good girl?
No.
I thought not.
Why?
Oh, I knew you wouldn't be. I knew you couldn't be.
What do you mean, a good girl? Well, I am. The idea.
Did you drive in for lunch and come right back home?
Father, I cannot tell a lie.
Uh-huh. What did you do?
Bought these shoes.
Oh, very pretty, very nice. What else?
This and some other new frocks I think you like. Oh, thanks for the 2 inches off my middle.
She points to her hair.
And thank you for my life. What can I do for you? Wait, just wait.
She glances around the room, then looks back at him.
Why are you so grumpy?
Oh, you always say I'm grumpy.
Well, I've been a good girl until today. I've practically been your slave, and I am well. Look.
She taps both her knees.
Reflexes, terrific. Balance, perfect. And I can walk a straight line. I can even walk backwards. Excuse me, will you?
She steps outside.
Here, the man wants to see you. Good. Now go and look out for our doctor, will you? Kneel on him, club him if necessary, but make him have a drink, Anne. Get that look off his face somehow.
Inside, Steele sits glumly, resting his chin on his hand.
Penny, for your thoughts.
Oh, hello, Anne. How
hello,
are you?
How are you? You look as if you needed a drink.
No, thanks.
What do you think of Judith?
Fine.
You did that. You should be very proud of yourself.
Yes.
Her smile fades.
Dr. Steele, when you came down to Judith's room right after the operation, you had a certain look on your face. I put it down at the time to the strain, the tension of the operation.
I don't understand you.
He turns away with a sober expression. She follows him.
I saw that look on your face just now. I'm Irish. I may be psychic and funny. I'm probably quite wrong. But is there something? Something about Judith that you're holding back? If there is, please, I am her best friend.
Will you come outside, please?
They walk through French doors onto a terrace. Taking her elbow, Steele leads her away from the party. At a railing, they stand face to face.
And there is something.
I can't save her. Nothing can. Nothing.
What?
She's going to die.
No. No, that isn't true.
She presses a hand to her forehead.
You shouldn't have touched her.
I'm not going to argue with you now. The facts are these. Well, I'll try to tell you in simple layman's language.
You mean she's going to have that pain again? And that ghastly confusion?
No. She's not going to suffer anymore. It's all behind her now.
Yes, but you told her she could ride.
That's the freakish nature of this thing. She will ride. She'll seem well and normal like everybody else.
How long have you known?
Since the operation.
Why didn't you let her go then?
I haven't jurisdiction over life and death.
Furrowing her brow, Anne hangs her head.
How will it come?
Quietly. Peacefully.
God's last small mercy.
He shifts his gaze. She raises her head and stares into his face.
Will she have no warning? No chance to be ready?
There may be a moment towards the end when... when her sight may not be quite as good as usual. A dimming of vision. Then a few hours, perhaps 3, 4.
How long has she got? A year? 6 months?
Possibly more.
I don't believe it.
Anne, she must never know.
No, no.
Judith steps out onto the terrace.
Fool! Sneaks hiding out on me. What's the idea? Well, actually, we were talking about just how much you should do. I told him you'd have the devil of a day, but he said it didn't matter. It's been the best day of my life. This is for you.
Oh, Judith, you shouldn't.
She gives him a tiny box.
What's in it?
A little gold and a lot of sentiment.
I'm a grateful patient.
He struggles to unwrap it.
Look at that man. I thought surgeon had to have such steady hands. Let me help you.
Oh, thank you.
Anne unties the bow and hands it back to him. Steele pulls off the tissue wrapping paper, revealing a jeweler's box. He opens it. Inside are a pair of gold cufflinks made with tiger eye stones.
Oh, well, they're very pretty.
I'm so glad you like them. We couldn't think of anything else, could we, Anne?
The two friends share a look.
Of course, it isn't enough, really. I have an idea. This is my birthday.
What?
Well, it is really, you know. My new birthday. Let's all three of us each year get together and celebrate, shall we? Come on. All right. Let's have some champagne right now and start.
They go back inside.
Come on, everyone. I'm going to have some champagne. Where have you been?
Days later.
Now, I'll wear my green slacks in the morning and my big hat for lunch. He'll like that. I've got to look my best. Ever little Judy had to knock them for a row of pins. Oh, Agatha, here are the menus for the weekend. Martha, come here. Now, it's up to you for evening. Anne, do you think we ought to dress for dinner tomorrow night? Give him a bit of swish.
Just as you please, darling.
Oh, no, I don't think so. They'll be tired. I'm getting to be such a hostess. This is my first real weekend. The house just reeks with dignity. Of course, I'll have the kids in. I'll always have them. I don't think he minds them, do you?
I don't suppose he will.
What's the matter?
Nothing, honey. I've got to get through these bills. It's the 10th of the month.
You'll put on your best dignity, won't you? And help me keep dignified? Well, I'm here, and I think I'm somewhere very nice.
Look at me.
Judith slowly shifts her gaze toward her friend.
I'm looking at you.
You're in love.
Yes.
I thought so. What about him? Has he given you any encouragement?
Not a ripple on the water. He drives me crazy, but when I just think of him, and when I think if I hadn't fallen off that horse, it was awful. But it was wonderful. Life's a different thing. For the first time, I wake up in the morning with something to live for. Something besides horses and hats and food. He's very fine, isn't he? Very worthwhile, isn't he? Oh, but if only the Spaniards or the French had settled New England instead of the Pilgrims.
Yes, but if he hasn't given you any signs, how do you know?
Well, that's it. I don't know. But he didn't go away. That's one sign, Mr. Watson. Must mean something. Don't be against me.
Anne breaks into a warm smile.
I'm not against you.
Good.
Judith turns to go, but suddenly stops.
Anne, will you do something for me?
Of course.
But I was just thinking, you might take advantage of any lull in the conversation tomorrow. Just to mention what a good wife Judith would be. What an ideal wife.
Anne frowns.
Well, don't you think I would be?
Oh, the best.
Well, keep both fingers crossed for me. Anne, one day it'll happen to you. Then you'll know how wonderful it is.
She strides into the hall.
Martha! Martha!
Anne shuts her door, then picks up the telephone.
Harry Hill 7-7340.
May I have Miss Judith's telephone book, please?
It's on a desk.
Is that Murray Hill 7-7340? May I speak to Dr. Steele, please?
As Martha takes the book, she eyes Anne. Later, Nurse Wainwright shows Anne into Steele's study. As he closes the sliding doors, the nurse remains in the waiting area.
What is it?
You and I have got something to talk about.
Yes?
Does Judith mean anything more to you than just a patient?
Leaning over her chair, Steele looks into her eyes for a moment, then gazes off to the side. Stepping away, he stops near his desk with his back to her. Anne rises and faces him squarely.
Guess it's impertinent on me to ask you that.
No, it isn't.
I think I know. I think you do care for her.
Yes, Anne. I do care. so much.
What are you going to do? Are you going to go up there this weekend and tell her and hold her in your arms? Are you? Or are you going to go away and leave her to us? Which is better? I don't know. I haven't slept for 2 nights.
Neither have I.
This morning I saw it coming. And just now, a little while ago, I asked her to her face, do you love him? She answered, yes, I do. It's up to you.
She said that. You know, Anne, before women never meant anything to me. I'd never met anyone like her. I was all set. I had plans, made arrangements.
I know, Vermont. Why don't you go away for your own sake and the sake of your work?
Work? How can I work when I can't cure her? There's nothing else in my mind. I just sit here. I can't think of anything else. Oh, Anne. I'd give my own body if I thought it would do any good.
Isn't there anything? Anything? What's she ever done that should happen to her? She's never harmed a soul. She's never done anything to anyone except kindness.
I know. Here, look. Here's a letter I got today from Vienna. The last finding in the case. There's the translation. Not a chance in the world. I don't know where to look next.
He takes a file off his desk.
Here's this Heinzick in Vienna, the greatest in the world. 12 of them. Prognosis negative. Negative.
He flips through it, then tosses it aside.
Negative.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you both. You couldn't marry her. You know what you'd expect of marriage, a home, children, plans for the future. You couldn't do that to her.
The great thing, Anne, is for her never to know.
But could you stand watching her growing happier every day with this thing creeping up behind her? Could you stand that? I couldn't.
It isn't a question of what you or I could stand. The main thing is for her to be happy. Every hour.
Pursing his lips, he steps away and paces with his hands clasped. Anne watches him. Pausing before her, Steele takes her hands into his.
Anne, all my life I've been able to tell people what to do. Now I...
Telephone, doctor.
This is Dr. Steele.
Eyeing Anne, he points to the receiver. She shakes her finger. Judith on the other end.
Are you operating, doctor? Are you in your office, doctor? Well, there's a very good friend of yours waiting for you here. A very grateful patient. Well, you'd better hurry. I have a vague feeling of relapse coming on. All right, hurry up. Goodbye. Anne! Anne!
She's out, Miss Judith.
Where'd she go? Weren't you telephoning the doctor's office in there? Yes. Well, wasn't Miss Anne there? What do you mean?
I heard her telephoning. She made an appointment, said she was going down there.
Today?
Yes, just a little while ago.
Oh, well, that's funny.
Fingering the belt of her dress, Judith steps back into the other room. She crosses her arms, goes over to a sofa, and sits. Resting her chin on her hand, she looks out a window. Later, Judith sits at the bottom of the staircase with her dog, Daffy, absentmindedly stroking his ears. She turns toward the front door. As it opens, Anne enters. Judith rises.
Hello.
Hello, Judy.
Where have you been?
For a drive.
Where'd you go?
Town.
What for?
Shopping.
What did you buy?
Oh, I...
Anne, where did you go?
Judy.
A maid answers the door. Steele enters.
How do you do? Oh, hello.
You did hurry.
Yes. How are you, Anne?
Anne rushes up the steps. Judith stares after her. Above, Anne goes into her room.
Did I stumble into something?
Yes. We're on the verge of a jealous scene about you.
What?
He flicks his gaze to the second floor, then steps closer to her.
Darling, poor fool. Don't you know I'm in love with you?
He looks down, then glances back upstairs. Judith steps away, heads for the living room, then turns around. A bright smile spreads across her lips as she faces him.
Would you like some tea or a drink?
Tea, I think.
He beams in return.
Elizabeth? Yes, Miss Judith?
Bring us some tea, please.
Yes, Miss.
They step into the living room.
Sorry.
You couldn't have said anything I wanted to hear more. Judy, dear, I love you so much.
He draws her into his embrace. She happily gazes over his shoulder. Now, Nurse Wainwright and an assistant in Steele's office.
Now, these books go to the Medical Library, New York City. Do you understand?
Yes, Miss Wainwright.
Judith enters.
Hey! Is anybody here?
Oh, how do you do, Miss Traherne?
Oh, hello, Wainwright. How are you?
Fine, thank you. The doctor isn't here.
Where is he? I was to have lunch with him.
Well, he wants you to meet him at the restaurant. I haven't had a chance to congratulate you.
Oh, thank you. It's a strange world, isn't it? First time I came here, you were packing, and it was the end of my life. Now you're still packing, and my life is just beginning. Couldn't I help you while I'm waiting?
No, thank you. We're all finished. Well, almost.
All set, lady.
Excuse me, please.
Certainly.
Wainwright confers with a mover.
Now, you take those boxes out and then come back.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I downly broke my neck to get that doctor of yours. I'm mad about him. Of course, it's the screwiest setup. Vermont and Long Island. We live in different worlds. I wonder if Vermont and I will understand each other. What do you think?
I don't know much about Vermont except what he's told me.
He loves it, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I will, too. You know, Wainwright, I'm going to sell my house, my apartment, and my horses. All except Challenger. I'll keep him. He's a champion. Am I disturbing you?
Not at all.
I'm glad he's going to give up cutting people open. He's one of the great scientists. And I'll be Mrs. Pasteur. We'll be such useful people in the world.
She reads his diploma.
To all to whom these presents shall come, greeting be it known, Frederick Steele is a fellow of the something or other. I'll tend his house and mind his books and answer his mail and...
Straightening up his desk, she finds a file.
Judith Traherne.
It's stamped Case History. She sits and opens it up. Inside, she finds a typewritten letter that reads, Translation of Dr. Carl Heinzig's Diagnosis. My dear Dr. Steele, a study of the case history of Miss Judith Traherne leads me to concur with your diagnosis. A recurrence is certain. Definitely, prognosis negative. Sincerely yours, Carl Heinzig, M.D. The words prognosis negative, typed in bold capital letters, jump off the page and fill the screen. Clutching the note, Judith slowly rises. She flips to another sheet of paper inside the file. It's a second letter from a different doctor. His diagnosis also reads, prognosis negative. She turns more pages. A third, fourth, and even fifth letter all feature the words, prognosis negative. With a blank expression, Judith turns away from her fiancé's desk and stiffly walks out of his study. In the waiting area, Nurse Wainwright sits at a typewriter.
Wainwright?
Hmm?
What does prognosis mean?
It means what the future of a case looks like.
What does negative mean?
That's not so good. It means hopeless.
Judith's eyes widen. She rushes to the door. Wainwright quickly gets to her feet. Staring after Judith, she presses a hand to the side of her face. Later, at a posh restaurant, patrons gather around a table laden with an exquisite buffet. A chef in a tall white hat nods to a guest. A quintet plays on a bandstand. Crossing the room, a waiter bears a cocktail on a silver tray to Judith, who sits alone at a table. Slumped in her chair, she wears a fur hat and coat. He replaces her empty glass with the full one.
Take away the flowers, will you?
Yes, miss.
He removes a small vase. Steele enters with a maitre d' who points out Judith's table. The doctor grins as he strolls over and joins her.
Awfully sorry, darling. Had a consultation. Hey, you look lovely.
Have a drink.
No, thanks.
You should have one someday.
I will. Perhaps on our wedding day.
Our wedding day.
She downs her drink.
What's the matter?
Could anything be?
How many of those have you had?
Several.
If I'm late, I'm sorry.
Oh, Anne, don't be sorry about anything. Sit down and join us. We're playing games. Hide and seek. You can play, too. Puss in the corner.
What's she talking about?
Nothing.
Anne and Steele exchange a look.
Would you like me to leave? You two dear friends must have so much to talk over. My dearest friends. Have a cocktail, Anne. I'm going to have another. Wait up.
Yes, I'll have a cocktail.
You sure you won't have one?
Steele nods.
Two of the same. They're fine. They deaden the brain. You know about brains.
The doctor tries to smile.
They loosen the inhibitions, make the tongue waggle.
Are you sure you're feeling quite well, darling?
You should know how well I am. Am I well? Shh. It's a secret. Or don't you two know about secrets?
Judith, will you?
Judy, darling.
Oh, Carrie, dear. What a nice hat.
Steele stands.
You remember the eminent Dr. Steele?
Yes, of course. Judy says you're frightfully good. You must look me over sometime. Do sit down.
My dear, if you have anything wrong with you at all, anything at all, you must fly to him at once.
Of course. Will I see you at the Radcliffe Tod next week?
Of course.
Judy, you'll be in Vermont.
Oh, yes, Vermont. I hear it's cold in Vermont.
In the winter, but it's nice.
You must come to Vermont, Carrie.
Oh, I will, of course. Anyway, darling, it's nice to have seen you. Goodbye, Anne, Doctor.
I meant to ask you, Doctor, will I be a specimen case? Will I be in the medical journal?
Shall we order? Waiter.
Would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Why don't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me?
She eyes a menu.
Well, I think I have a large order of prognosis negative.
What do you mean?
You know, Earth Silopla. Prognosis negative. You know what prognosis negative means, Doctor. Explain to her. Or have you? It means a few months of pretending you're well, then blindness, then...
Wait, Judith. We can't talk in here.
Oh, yes, we can. It was a question of humoring the patient, wasn't it? Give the poor dear everything she wants. Time's so short. Marry her, if necessary. I know now why you went to his office that day. To beg him to marry me out of pity. Be kind, Dr. Steele. You're both so kind. So long, my friends.
Judith, you're wrong.
Judith rises and marches off. Later in a supper club.
Let my heart be still and listen to one song of love. Let me feel the thrill of quiet we know nothing of.
Judith sits with Alec at the bar. He slowly brings a martini to his lips. She watches an orchestra perform, her eyelids drooping heavily.
And understand, forgive me.
A bartender comes over.
4 o'clock, sir. Last drink.
Two here, two there. Same thing.
Yes, sir.
It's funny.
Why?
Tomorrow.
You have heartburn tonight.
Oh!
Did you ever think about time? It goes, Alec. That's the business of time. Tick, tick, tick. You can almost hear it go by. Before you know it, it's gone. Then where are we, my friend?
High and dry. That's the last drink.
She takes a gulp.
I want to hear that song again.
What song?
That song about time.
Too late again. Bart's just gone home.
She stumbles over to the musicians who are packing up.
Hi. I want to hear that song again.
Well, it's time to go to bed, Mr. Hearn.
Oh, mustn't go to bed. Mustn't sleep. It's a waste. Time doesn't sleep. That's a joke.
She offers money.
Here. Come on, sink, please.
Thanks. Come on, boys. 50. Time for tenderness, Malcolm.
I will never ask for more than you can give. Yet when you say, be gay today and live, my heart answers cautiously, today will soon be gone. Why rush to meet our destiny? why must we hurry on? Oh, give me time for tenderness, one little hour from each big day.
Judith sways alone.
Give me time to stop and bless the golden sunset of a summer day. Let my heart be still and listen to one song of love. Let me feel the
shaking her head, Judith takes a sip of her drink, then sets it down.
Nothing of, oh, give me time for tenderness to hold your hand and understand.
Daytime. A woman holds a program. Below a drawing of a horse jumping a fence, the cover reads, Long Island Hunt and Horse Club Horse Show. In the crowded clubhouse, shiny trophies adorn a table. Two riders on horseback trot past. One, a woman, sits side saddle. The crowd makes way as Judith enters, dressed in a derby, jacket, jodhpurs, and black boots.
Hello, Judy.
Ready for me.
A club member lights her cigarette. Judith goes into a dressing room where Carrie and others sit.
Oh, Judy, darling, you are wonderful. Drink the ball or drive, but you still retain your seat.
Nearby, Martha sleeps soundly in a chair. Judith sits beside her and lightly taps her with a crop.
Hello, Martha. Excuse me, miss. How's the old homestead?
All right, Miss Judith.
You know, I don't know how you do it. It amazes me the way you can stick on a horse. You know, I'm one of your best friends, darling. I don't care what people say about
how
you.
How nice of you.
Drink the town dry. Take all their husbands and sweethearts. I still say it's none of my business, but
I'd agree with you.
Oh, of course. You want to adopt that attitude. You can already fill the Yale bowl with people who are sore at you. One more, it doesn't matter.
She leaves.
Martha, I can't possibly change unless I have a drink.
Yes, miss.
Later, Judith returns to the main room in an evening gown. One of the show judges approaches.
Mr. Hank, could we have you now?
No, I want another drink.
Hello, Judith, darling.
Hello.
Oh, Miss Judith.
Yes, Michael.
I'm going along now. I've got the horses packed. It's snowing outside, though. I want to get back before it gets too thick.
Good.
You did very well, Miss Judith.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, Miss Judith.
What?
I was wondering if you'd care to drive back with me. That little mare's got a bad case of bronchitis and can't possibly last the night.
Hello, George. Jessica's girl?
Yes.
Why don't you put her out of her misery? I'll get there if I can.
Judy, darling.
Hello. Sit down, please. Hello.
She saunters up to the bar.
Hello, Judy.
Hi.
Hello, Judy.
Here's a tragedy for you. Jessica's girl has bronchitis and can't possibly last the night. Jessica's girl is a horse. Poor Jessica's girl. The usual.
Yes, here we go
again.
Judy, darling. Yes. Trotty.
The judge hurries over to them.
Where's Ann?
She blew. I guess the way you were riding, honey, sort of gave her the jitters.
Poor Ann.
Mr. Hearn, please. They want you to come.
I got you. The cup.
Here's the cup. I'll tell them you're coming.
The cup. The darling cup. Excuse me, kids. I've won a prize.
Hurry back.
Mm-hmm.
She steps away from Alec in the crowded bar. Two society matrons pass, looking down their noses at her. Judith sashays by them. Nearing the trophy area, she suddenly stops. Steele rises from a chair.
Well, if it isn't the extraordinary surgeon.
I've been trying to see you.
How's the mortality rate these days, Doctor? You're having fun with the knives?
Drop it.
Why aren't you in Vermont with the bugs?
You know why I'm not. I want to talk to you.
When I need a doctor, I'll send for one. I'm not in your care any longer.
You'll always be in my care.
Will I? Is that part of your duty? To hang on to the very end? To watch with those scientific eyes?
Drop it. I know how you feel. Anything to strike back at me, but don't do it this way.
What do you mean this way?
This. There's nothing in it.
What do you want me to do? Stay alone in my room and think how in a few months...
Judith, I want you to find peace. We all have to die. The tragic difference is that you know when and we don't. But the important thing is the same for all of us. To live our lives so that we can meet death whenever it comes. Beautifully and finely.
Beautifully and finely. I'll die as I please. Now leave me alone.
You hate me, don't you?
Oh, yes, I hate you so much and for so many reasons. I hate you for not telling me the truth. I hate you for letting me hurl myself at your head. I'm so ashamed.
I can understand.
Mr. Hearn, please. They're waiting.
I'll let them wait. They've got plenty of time. Oh, all right.
She walks off.
Wait a minute, Judy.
I have
to
go in for the
cup.
No,
we've got a party.
Yes.
Steele, how do you do?
Hello, Alec.
Did I buy you a drink?
No, thanks.
Three-minute approach.
Judy's certainly on this town, all right.
Hey, you're talking about a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Steele punches the man. He goes down.
Oh, what's the matter?
Well, he made a crack about Judy and the gentleman's
socket. You think she pulled through, Doc?
I think so. Respiration's easier.
Yeah. Lucky we got her in time.
In a stable, Michael, a vet, and two others stand vigil over a sick horse. It lies in a bed of hay as a stable boy rubs its flank. Judith enters and stares down at the animal.
Is she dead?
No, it was touch and go for a while. It's more touch than go now. Whew. I actually said a prayer. She's game, though. Put up a brave fight.
She turns her back to him, wrapping her arms around her chest.
Oh, you're cold?
She turns around to face him.
Yeah, I have a fire in the tack room, Miss Judith. Would you like to go in and warm yourself?
Why not?
Well, thanks, Doc.
Call me if you need me.
I will. Good night. Clarence, get yourself some blankets.
Yes, sir.
He follows her into the tack room. As she stands near a small wood-burning furnace, he reaches for a radio.
First cold's always the bitterest.
He turns out the light in the main area, then shuts the door.
The first and the last.
She goes over to the radio. He feeds the fire.
Talk to me, Michael.
What shall I talk about, Miss Judith?
Anything, just talk.
You know, it is a great show tonight. I came to think you may not be entirely wrong about Challenger.
Did you?
I was scared, though.
Was I that bad?
No, but there's something about the way you ride that puts my heart in my mouth. Do you mind if I say something to you, Miss Judith?
Of course not. I asked you to talk, didn't I?
Well, I think you've been going too hard lately, night and day. You can't do that and keep on with your jumping horses. It's terrible hard on you. I was hoping that maybe in the state of mind you were in, you wouldn't ride tonight. A silver cup isn't worth it.
I wanted that cup. I had to show the gentry I've still got what it takes.
You sure have.
He looks at her intently. His lips curl into a sly half smile.
I told you to keep on talking, Michael.
You know, you and I are kind of alike, Miss Judith.
Are we? How?
You've the spirit in you, the same as I have in me. It's the fighting that counts. You've got to have action in your life, the same as I've got to have action in mine. We only live once, Miss Judith.
Just once. Tell me about you, Michael.
Me?
Yes, you. Is one human to another? We've always talked about horses.
What's there to say?
Well, do you have a happy life, Michael?
I guess I was born out of my time, Miss Judith. I should have lived in the days when it counted to be a man. The way I like to ride and the way I like to fight. What good's riding and fighting these days? What do they get you?
She studies his face for a moment, then turns her head away. Michael comes closer and rubs her shoulder. Taking out a silver case, Judith steps over to a table. She slides a cigarette out of the case and slips it between her lips. Picking up a matchbox, she strikes a match, lights the cigarette, then flings the flaming match to the floor. Michael steps on it.
What are you trying to do, burn us up?
Are you afraid to burn, Michael?
He throws her a look.
Are you afraid to die?
I wouldn't want to die while you're alive, Miss Judith.
You're making love to me, aren't you?
You invited me to talk to you as a man, didn't you?
She gazes coldly at him.
Yes.
I'm as good as some of them that's been playing around with you. They're all afraid of you. Oh, I know, I've heard them talking. They'd go after you, but they're afraid of you. I wish to heaven I was in their boots.
What then, Michael?
The nights I've laid awake thinking of you. The things I've wanted to say to you ever since I first laid eyes on you.
He pulls her into his embrace and kisses her lips. She squeezes his arm, then tries to pull away.
You're afraid.
Is it because I'm a stable hand, is it?
No, Michael, it isn't that.
She pushes out of his arms.
I just can't go on this way. First it's this. There's something else. Michael, I just can't die like this.
Die?
Yes. I'm going to die in a few months, Michael.
Oh, heaven forgive you for saying a thing like that.
Yes. Heaven forgive me. When it comes...
She presses her forehead.
Must be met beautifully and finally. That's what he said.
He tenderly tries to take her hand.
Oh, I'm all shot, Michael.
Shrugging him off, she walks out. Later, in her darkened mansion, Judith goes up the stairs to her bedroom. Logs burn in a fireplace, throwing a dim glow into the room. Judith strolls over to the bed. The comforter has been carefully pulled back. Her large satin pillows gleam in the firelight. She picks up a telephone and starts to dial.
Murray Hill 7-7340.
Anne enters.
Anne, you should be asleep. Poor Anne, you've had so little sleep. Where did you go after you left the club? I've been so worried about you.
Judith puts the phone down.
To the stables, Michael. Judith. Oh, don't worry, darling. I was saved. Of course, for what I was saved isn't quite clear. Was that Steele you were calling up?
Judith nods.
Doesn't matter. Wasn't any answer. This business of apologizing to a man really doesn't matter. And I'm tired. So tired.
Come along. Let me put you to bed.
Why?
I'll read you to sleep.
Why? So I can dream.
Oh, Judith, my darling, please don't talk like that. Please don't.
Then I don't know what to do. It's the waiting, day and night. Would I be wrong if I made it happen? Now, would I?
Judith, please don't talk like that. Don't. Please.
Anne drops her head into Judith's lap. Don't. Now, Steele and Alec in an apartment.
You know, I see the dawn come up about 4 days out of seven in this place. Something always seems to happen. I don't know how it does, but... Say, can I fix you another drink?
No, thanks.
Who can be calling at this hour in the...
As he heads to the intercom, Steele reaches for his coat.
Hello. Judy! Yes, he's here. Come on up. You know, push the 10th button in the elevator. Judy? Yeah, it's Judy. You know, Doc, I've loved her for a long time, but I can't help her now because, well, you're the one man, so be nice to her, will you?
Oh. Alec goes to the door.
Hello, Alec.
Hello, Judy.
Hello, Doctor.
Hello, Judy.
This is a nice time to come calling, isn't it?
Come in.
She lowers her gaze uncertainly and walks into the living room. As she steps past him, her eyes flit across his face, then look away.
You know, I searched half the town for you two. I even rang your night bell. I thought doctors were always on 24-hour duty.
Well, as a matter of fact, Alec very kindly asked me to come around here, and we've been talking.
Did I interrupt something?
Oh, to the contrary. You know, see, the dawn's well up, and I was going to cook some eggs and bacon, and wouldn't you like some? Well, I just thought of it as a way to get me out of here. I'm kind of bright that way. Glad you dropped in, Judy. Fix your drink, Doc.
He leaves.
Shall I make one?
No, no, thank you. You could do something for me, though.
He steps closer.
What?
Forgive me?
There's nothing to forgive.
Shaking her head, she turns away.
The things I said to you.
He gently squeezes her arm.
Darling, it's good to say things. Gets them off your chest. I understood.
Did you?
She takes his hand.
Do you?
Yes.
Said you wanted me to have peace. Where is peace?
Within yourself.
She searches his face.
Judy, come here.
He tenderly draws her onto his lap.
I tried to do all the things I said I would. Tonight, I...
She smiles into his eyes.
Darling, there's been no one but you. Darling, how good it is to call you that again. I had to come and tell you, no one. See, I couldn't go on with the thought that you might be bitter toward me. I didn't want you to think of me like that.
But I love you, Judy.
I know you do. May I take back every rotten thing I ever said to you? Oh, darling, help me. I've been so stupid. I've crammed every minute so full of waste. And now there's so little time left. And I don't know what to do. I'm afraid. You're so right and strong.
She collapses against his chest. He holds her.
It's all right now, Judy. It's all right.
May I see you sometimes?
You're going to see me every day. You're coming to Vermont with me.
Am I?
Yes. Maybe we'll find that peace there together.
No, that wouldn't be fair to you. We'd have so little.
Forever, Judy. Will you marry me?
Marry? Oh, wouldn't it be marvelous if we could? Have a real wedding and be given away and church bells and champagne and a white frock and orange blossoms and a wedding cake. That's one thing I won't have missed. And you're giving it to me. I can never love you enough.
Judy.
They warmly embrace. Now a strong wind blows leaves past a country house. Judith dashes from the front porch to a truck parked near the mailbox. She pokes her head into the driver's window.
Good morning, Elmer. Blowy, isn't it?
Sure is, Mrs. Steele.
How's the sciatica?
Fine, Mrs. Steele.
He drives off. Judith opens the mailbox, removes a bundle of letters. Then she runs back to the house, accompanied by two foxhounds. As she slides through the front door, a throw rug bunches beneath her feet. She shuts the door and starts to open the mail. Wearing a sweater, plaid jacket, and plain trousers, she reads a letter and heads into the kitchen.
Martha!
Yes, Miss Judith?
Here's a letter from Miss Anne.
Oh, how nice. Is she coming down?
Not yet, but soon, I think. I'm still trying to rent the house, but no one seems to have any money, and I'm not going to let tramps have it. Why do people complicate their lives so, Martha? All those horses in that house. Here we have nothing, and yet we have everything. Haven't we?
I think you have, Miss Judith. No wonder she hasn't popped up to see you. You haven't seen her for 3 months.
Oh, she'll be up soon. She wants to finish her work first.
What's that? The doctor's lunch?
Hasn't he had it yet?
No.
Why not?
Oh, I knocked on his door twice. I tell you, Miss Judith, when he gets busy with these bugs, he's like a bear with a sore head. Well, I wouldn't disturb him.
Well, but... I'll disturb him.
Wait just a minute.
Am I afraid?
She picks up the tray.
Thank you, Martha.
Taking it outside, she braces against the cold and strides to a smaller house next door. Judith steps through the entrance into a study, then opens the door to a laboratory. Inside, Steele and another man work with glass slides. Both wear white smocks, caps, surgical masks, and gloves.
Hey, your lunch, Doctor.
Judy, I've told you.
You were rude to Martha.
I was not rude to Martha. Martha knows, as you should know, that... Well, Henry, the damage is done.
What damage? Me?
I've told you never to come in here when I'm working. This joint is a septic. You're crawling with microbes, bugs.
Me?
Yes, you.
Well, that's a fine way to talk to your wife.
Coming in here with all this food, we've got too many bugs in here now. And just as I was about to discover the secret of life. Well, maybe not at this particular moment.
Oh, but you will. And you might have. Guess it is my fault.
She starts to leave.
Judy, darling.
I am sorry.
Oh, there's nothing to be sorry for. You little bugs met my little bugs and the fool's little bugs. And they all got together and had a party, and they're going to get so cockeyed drunk they won't be any use to anybody.
You're mad.
Yeah. Oh, Henry.
Yes, doctor?
Get that food out of there and prepare for another experiment. If at first you don't succeed, then try. Hey, just a minute. I'm hungry. Do you realize it's almost 2 o'clock?
Oh, no. Don't you touch that. It's probably got some bugs in it. Huh? If the sandwich's bugs got into your bugs, it's more than probable that your bugs got into the sandwich.
Just a minute.
No.
She leads him outside with the tray.
All right, Tuffy.
Oh, it's cold.
What's new in the world?
Guess what? I got a letter from Anne. She's coming to visit us. Read it. It's in my pocket.
What'd you do this morning?
Big things.
What?
I walked.
Oh.
As they go in, he reads the letter.
Here, Martha. Can't have that. It's got bugs in it.
Where did you walk?
To the village. We'll give you your lunch here. May we use your table, Martha?
Why, of course, Miss Judith.
Come on, sit down, Larry.
What's new in the village?
Well, there's a well-founded rumor that it'll be twins for Mrs. Dibble.
Say, this is great. We'll give the old girl a field day. Sure, the great village of Brattleboro, the shopping district, the city hall, and we'll even take her to the dance on Saturday night.
Woo!
Oh, now what? Come here. What did you do?
She drops a hot dish on the table. He kisses one of her palms. She offers the other. He kisses that, too. Later, a car drives up to the house. Martha and a houseboy greet it. Steele gets out from behind the wheel. Judith hops out of the back with Daffy, and Anne climbs out of the passenger seat.
Here you go, Daffy. Yeah. Thank you,
Leonard. Here we are.
Excuse Martha. Hello, Martha. How are you? First rate. It's good to see you, Miss Anne. We're going to fatten her up and give her some country gravy.
Oh, it's perfect.
Don't you like it?
Yes.
Want to see my lab?
Yes, I'd love.
Come on.
Don't take her in. She's got bugs, too.
As Judith goes into the house, Steele leads Anne next door.
Oh, this is nice.
Anne, isn't Judy beyond words?
No blue moments at all?
No. We never even think about it. In fact, we don't even talk about it. And you mustn't.
Of course not.
Not even with your eyes. You'll be tempted to. But watch yourself. You see, we just pretend that nothing's going to happen. Understand? Come on, I'll show you the rest of the place. Anne, this is Henry Curtis, Miss King. How do you do?
How do you do?
Well, Anne, how do you like it?
Splendid.
Well, someday, perhaps in my lifetime or somebody else's lifetime, we'll find a serum that will put an end to these growths.
Springtime on the front lawn.
Hey, Judy, your thingamabobs have come.
My what about?
Your seed, your flowers, your bottles.
Oh, how wonderful.
Oh, here's a tongue twister.
Incomparabilis, silly.
Well, ladies, what kind of language is that?
Incomparabilis.
Incomparabilis.
Oh.
Listen, darling, be sure you plant them in the sun.
I will. Oh, here's one for you. Jonquilla Narcissus.
Ah, that's a good one. I'll name a horse after that one.
Go along with
you. I'm going along right now. Goodbye, Miss Anne.
Goodbye, Mr. O'Leary.
And now to be serious for a moment, about the Grand National.
Ah, I knew there was some reason why you came up here, Michael.
I still think $1,000 entry fees a lot of money to waste on that little horse of yours.
Oh, but it won't be wasted. Bet you 6-4 Challenger wins.
You got a bet.
Shake.
Have a good time in Philadelphia.
Thanks, I'm really excited. I'm going to wear all my best clothes and we're going on a tear.
Oh, Miss Judith, you're looking fine.
Am I good?
Yeah, sure. It makes me believe in those prayers I've been saying.
Her smile falls.
Come on, Doc.
Don't call him Doc. That isn't respect. See you at the National. Bye.
He drives off. Judith turns toward a garden, gazing at the bright sky.
Anne! There's a storm coming.
What?
It's getting dark about a minute. We'll have to take our raincoats with us. Suppose it'll rain cats and dogs and ruin all our nice bulbs. Look how it's clouding up. It's getting darker every second. It's funny, I can still feel the sun on my hands.
She stares down at them with a growing frown. Turning away, Judith grabs her throat.
Judith, Anne!
They embrace.
The sun has gone. There are clouds. It is getting dark.
Oh, it's all right. It's all right.
Shh. As Anne slumps against her, Judith gazes down at her own hand, then up to the sky. She covers her face for a moment with one eye peeking out between her thumb and index finger. She lets her hand fall from her face and wraps her arms around her friend.
Judy! Judith!
Steele pokes his head out.
If the ladies' gardening group can adjourn their meeting for a moment, I've got some news. We're not going to Philadelphia, we're going to New York. You just write a wire over the telephone. Come on in, I'll show you. Come on, Judy.
Come on. Not a word.
They get to their feet. Moments later, they enter the house.
Darling, this is great news. Read it. A wire from Fisher in Philadelphia. Martha wrote it down. Well?
How nice.
How nice?
Is that all?
Anne, you read this. I never could read Martha's writing.
Well, Anne, of all the profound understatements.
Dr. Frederick Steele, Battleboro, Vermont. Wild with excitement over your latest report. Biological tests convinced me that you may be on right road with isolation.
Isolation, see? Choke off the oxygen. Oh, well, you two wouldn't understand what I'm talking about. Go ahead, read it. Here, I'll do it. Believe we should present material at board meeting in New York tomorrow. Please wire. My enthusiastic congratulations, Fisher. Isn't that marvelous?
It's wonderful, darling, isn't it, Anne? I was just bowled over for a minute.
Sure, so was I. I wired Fisher. I'd meet him at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Did you?
Yeah. That means driving to Mills Junction to catch the 440. Come on. Martha's packed you, but I can't even find my socks, so hurry.
He heads upstairs.
No.
Anne tries to follow him, but Judith stops her. She pulls Anne aside. They sit together on the sofa.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Nothing.
You can't go.
No.
You can't let him go.
Judy, we can't be late because this board convenes just twice a year. Some of the men are coming from Boston, and some even as far as Kansas City. Oh, and a very distinguished man, Heinze Gewirner, is coming. Those men are going to sit around that table and tell if your little boy is right or not. So come on, hurry.
Judith rubs Anne's shoulder.
Oh, Anne, you see, we can't stop that. Can you see anything? Can you see me? Not very well. Dimming of the vision.
Anne takes her hand.
Oh, if I can only last 3 weeks. Now, Anne, come on. Go back to your garden and plant your flowers just as if nothing had happened. Dear Anne, I know what I must do. Go on. Go on.
She gives her a gentle push. Anne walks off.
Judy!
She runs upstairs to the bedroom.
Darling, you know what this means, don't you? It means that in 5 or 10 years, I'll begin to get someplace.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
Oh, I might even be acclaimed. I might even get a picture in the papers.
Oh, you'll make history.
Say, which one are you going to wear, the black or the gray?
Darling, I don't think I'll go. You haven't packed nearly enough.
What do you mean you're not going? Oh, Judy, come out of it.
Well, Anne and I were talking down there, and I think I'll stay with her.
Oh, nonsense. A few days in New York will do you good. You can buy some new clothes.
Oh, but I don't need any new clothes.
Well, then you can see your friends.
Darling, please let me stay.
She takes shirts out of a drawer and puts them in his suitcase.
All right, darling.
You know, New York would bore me now. Really, it would. You see, this is my home here.
Oh, Judy. Why are you trembling?
Am I? Oh, kind of go be a little sentimental. This is the first time we've been separated.
She holds him close for a moment, then turns away. He watches her with a puzzled expression.
Judy, I'm not going. I don't know what I could have been thinking about. I'll call Fisher and tell him.
Are you worried about me?
Yes. Every second you're out of my sight.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous. You needn't be. Anne's here.
She adds several pairs of socks to his luggage. He sits on the bed beside the suitcase and regards her wistfully.
Judy, if anything should happen...
Shh. Mustn't talk about that. We agreed not to. You know I'm not afraid anymore. Oh, look, a hole. Wouldn't you make a fine figure at a board meeting with your big toe sticking out?
Gazing at her, he swallows deeply. She kneels before him.
Oh, darling, come on. You know, I used to be afraid. I've died 1,000 times. When death really comes, it'll come as an old friend, gently and quiet.
Oh, Judy.
Oh, we've had so much. If we lived to be 100, we could have no more. And I've been so happy. When the time comes...
It comes, I'm going with you.
Oh, darling.
I will.
You couldn't be that unkind to me.
I couldn't live without you.
will. You must go on with your work.
Oh, futile. Meaningless. Cruel.
Not if you take revenge for it.
Revenge?
Yes, revenge. By going on with this work and these experiments. By wiping out the... something will take me from you. One day. And with each blow you strike, you can say, that was for Judith, my wife. Come on.
They head out.
Lucy!
Yes, ma'am.
Now, no more nonsense. You run off to New York and have your big moment, and I'll wait home as a proper wife should.
They pause on the staircase.
Darling.
Yes?
Tell me something. Have I been a good wife?
Oh, Judy.
She melts into his arms. Lifting her, he slowly spins around, then sets her on her feet.
Oh, that makes me very happy. Happier than anything else. I've loved it so every minute. How can I make you understand?
Judith cringes, gently tugging on the arm of his blazer. She turns toward a window on the staircase landing. Sunlight shines through the gauzy curtains onto her face.
Look out there.
He stands behind her with his hands on her shoulders.
Somehow it's been like that. Shining and quiet.
Yes, Judy. It has.
She leans against him.
Nothing can hurt us now. What we have can't be destroyed. That's our victory. Our victory over the dark. It is a victory because we're not afraid.
She grips his hand, then discreetly finds the railing.
Come on. I'm sorry, it must be the going away.
Judy, you're marvelous.
Remember while you're away, tie your tie properly and brush your hair.
She finds the front door.
And for heaven's sakes, buy a new hat.
Why, that's a good hat.
Well, I can't let you go in front of all those people looking at a country farmer. Come say goodbye to the old boy.
And he's off.
Thanks, Lucy. Darling, here's a list of places you can reach me.
Oh, we won't need it. Run along. Drive like mad.
Goodbye, Anne. Take care of everything, won't you?
Judith shakes her head at Anne.
Yes. Goodbye, darling.
Steele gives her a quick kiss and hugs her again.
Mind yourself in the big city.
I'll be all right, but it's going to be lonely.
Don't tempt me. Get going.
Bye.
He hops into the car and waves as it drives off.
Hurry home.
Her hand slowly falls to her side. She tearfully crumples up Steele's list of numbers. The pieces of paper drift to the ground. Reaching out to Anne, she takes her friend's arm.
Have you planted the hyacinths yet?
Yes. No, I don't know.
Come on.
Moments later, in the garden.
I must help you plant them. See, they're his favorite flower. You'll dig the holes. I'll put them in. I want to very much.
Anne takes several bulbs out of a box and places them in Judith's hands.
Thank you.
She digs a hole in the ground, then guides Judith toward it. Judith places one of the bulbs inside and covers it with dirt. Anne digs a second hole. Together, they plant another bulb. Martha steps into the garden.
You didn't go, Miss Judith.
No, Martha.
Anne sadly eyes Martha.
Come along, Anne.
Distraught, Martha leaves.
You will water my flowers, won't you, Anne? Take care of them. And Anne, you will take care of my doctor, won't you? He'll need someone. He mustn't be alone. You see, it's so much worse for him than it is for me. Oh, really, that's true. I'm the lucky one. All I'll miss is growing old and being tired and worn out. Never leave him, will you?
I promise.
Don't, Anne. I'm happy, really I am. Now, let me see. If there's anything else. Oh, yes, one more thing. When Michael runs Challenger in the National, oh, and he'll win, I'm sure he'll win, have a party and invite all our friends. Now, let me see. Silly old Alec, if he's back from Europe, Colonel Mantle and old Carrie and... Oh, yes, and don't forget dear old Dr. Parsons. Give them champagne and be gay. Be very, very gay.
Her smile slowly fades.
I must go in now.
Anne helps her to her feet. With her arm around Judith's waist, Anne guides her back toward the house. Moments later, they walk along the porch.
Anne, please understand, no one must be here. No one. I must show him I can do it alone. Perhaps it will help him over some bad moments to remember it. Anne, be my best friend. Go now. Please.
Anne quickly turns away and runs past children playing in a nearby field. Judith leans against a pillar for a moment, her eyes downcast. Turning toward the front door, she feels her way past a wicker chair, opens the door, and steps inside. Taking slow, careful steps, she comes upon Martha, who reaches out to her.
Oh. Martha, Miss Judith. I'm going up to lie down now.
She starts up the steps.
Oh, Miss Judith.
Martha presses her hands to her mouth.
Daffy! Daffy, Don!
The dogs bound up to her.
Oh, darlings. Darlings. Now go down now. Come on. Down.
She pets the dogs, gives them a gentle slap, then pushes them away. They dash off. Tightly gripping the banister, she climbs the steps. Martha clutches her hands together and stares after Judith, her lip trembling. Reaching the upstairs landing, Judith runs her hand along the banister to her bedroom. She goes inside and shuts the door behind her. Martha comes up the stairs and gazes at the closed door. Her chest heaves with deep breaths. Her mouth hangs slightly agape. She takes a few steps toward the door, opens it, and goes inside. She walks over to a window and pulls down the shade, cutting off the sunshine. Dim lamplight throws shadows along the walls. Martha tiptoes to the bed. Judith kneels beside it, hunched over and praying. Standing behind her, Martha bows her head. Judith drops her head into her hands for a moment, then rises.
Is that you, Martha? Yes, Miss Judith.
Judith climbs onto the bed.
I don't want to be disturbed.
Martha gathers up several articles of clothing lying on the bed and puts them in a chair. She drops another item off the foot of the bed. Finally, she unfolds a quilt and gently covers Judith. Martha takes one last look, then turns away. Judith stretches out her hand toward Steele's pillow and caresses it. Martha steps out of the room, shutting the door behind her. Lying in bed, Judith gazes into the distance with hooded eyes. A faint smile plays across her lips as she grows still. Our view becomes fuzzy. Judith slowly drifts out of focus, and the screen fades to black. A title appears. The end. Credits appear. The players: Betty Davis as Judith Treherne, George Brent as Dr. Frederick Steele, Humphrey Bogart as Michael O'Leary, Geraldine Fitzgerald as Anne King, Ronald Reagan as Alec, Henry Travers as Dr. Parsons, Cora Witherspoon as Carrie, Dorothy Peterson as Miss Wainwright, Virginia Brissac as Martha, and others.